Hello, and thanks for listening to the Kept Faith Podcast. I'm Nick McCann. I'm joined by Travis Russell.
Hey, go Padres. It's 2024, Nick. I'm ready for some baseball. Is it time yet?
I don't know. Have you heard about a fan fest yet? I haven't.
I have not seen a complete looking roster yet. So no.
Yeah.
It's not quite time yet, but
we don't know if we have a fully functional Gallagher Square yet. We don't know.
That's true. That the remodel. We're waiting to see if Tatis can cover the entire outfield by himself.
Which
might be a possibility. You never know.
I'm looking forward to a two-man outfield. Just center left, center right. And
yeah,
I think they can do it. I believe. I have faith in that. They can do that. It's an exciting new year. It's the first episode of our 2024 season.
Yes.
Last year, you know, we're going to try to do more podcasts this year than we did last year, but you know, life happens. Last year our first podcast, we had tonight's guest, Ryan Finley from the San Diego Union Tribune. He came on. He was our first guest last year. Maybe we'll keep this as a tradition. Ryan's here. Say hi, Ryan. Hey.
What's going on, fellas? How you guys doing? Hopefully I sound a little less nervous today than I did about a year ago. You guys caught me at the end of the first week of my new job last time.
So. Right.
Wow.
A little bit better.
I cannot believe that was a year ago.
I know.
I don't know if you guys are in the same boat, but that literally feels like a month or so ago. Wild.
Does the UT have like a rookie seminar for, you know, just how to not blow all your money and let the fame go?
No, not yet. But it's been great. And, you know, Padre season notwithstanding, the job has been exactly what I signed up for. Obviously, there have been some challenges along the way, but it's been a blast. And again, you know, I'm one of those lucky people that can say I love what I do and it doesn't feel like work. So that's a good thing. That's a good thing. And very excited for 2024.
Yeah. Well, before we get into that, let's look at, like, you know, your first season covering the Padres in this role. I mean, you were here last January. We were all pretty jacked about, you know, what we would have to look forward to after going on that magical postseason run that the whole community really needed. And, you know, everybody was so excited. The fan fest, those images of, you know, Soto, Bogarts, Tatis, and Manny all on the stage.
The sunglasses. Oh, yeah.
The biggest fan fest in history, obviously. It almost looked dangerous. There was too many people there, but, you know. and then the season happens and it's an up and down. It's a disappointment. I think for everybody can say that, you know, they were slightly above 500, but it kind of unraveled in a really unique way. And now we have a new manager. I mean, what was it like covering this team that has so much going for it? Even statistically looks like it should have been better. We have the Cy Young Award winner. We all these things going for it, and it just was kind of a dud of a season. What was it like covering that?
Well, you know, guys, it's a good thing I grew up in San Diego, and I'm familiar because I got the full San Diego experience last year, guys. You know, the big expectations. Heck, a month into my new job, the Chargers trotted out a kicker to try to win a playoff game. And I knew exactly what was going to happen because I had seen it happen 10,000 times before. And then we get into, you know, the Padres season, and it was disappointing. The thing you sort of think about given some time. The thing that disappointed me last year was I never really felt like they had it going for any real stretch. I mean, okay, at the very end, okay. But, you know, the fans were so ready to jump on board with them and so ready to be taken along for a ride. Mm-hmm. And it's like that firework that barely lights, you know, and everybody's sitting there waiting and kind of nothing happens. And, you know, the only time I could really think about sitting there and going, well, here you go, was when they were in Mexico City. And, you know, they had gotten the rally sombrero or whatever it was going. Everybody seemed to be having a lot of fun. They scored a bunch of runs, but everybody scores a bunch of runs in Mexico City. And as it turns out, that was kind of fool's gold, right? Is, you know, whatever sort of fun and cohesion they showed that weekend, I don't think we really saw the rest of the way. And it's disappointing looking back, guys. I'm sure that you've agonized over this on this podcast before. three games go the other way and they're in the playoffs. And if they go to the playoffs, maybe they get the same draw that the Diamondbacks do.
Right.
And maybe, maybe they turn water into wine in the playoffs, and all of a sudden you're playing the Rangers in the World Series. Now, I will allow myself to get all the way ahead and go, well, the Padres matched up pretty well with the Rangers, didn't they? Like, that's what is so, it's why I love baseball and why I hate baseball. Because had three games over 162 gone a different way, had there been a, you know, what is it, a 1%, 2% deviation, they could have made the playoffs, and who knows what would have happened when they did it. Instead, you know, they trade Juan Soto, they hire a new manager, and we have more questions than ever heading into 2024.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the big moments I thought last year, I think obviously you had a hand in, was Kevin Lacy's article about Manny's leadership. I thought that was like, you know, I mean, it was a really exciting thing to read. Not, I mean, I wasn't thrilled about the facts of it, but it was like, it was a really exciting piece of journalism that came out and started a really good discussion about, you know, how, what is a leader in the role of a baseball manager in a baseball locker room, and, you know, what we should expect from Manny, what kind of leadership does he excel at? Which type does he not excel at? I mean, that piece I think kind of stood out as, you know, probably the most notable sports writing of last year, at least for me. I don't know, but I told Kevin that, I think, I don't know what he was on, I thought that was extraordinary. And I wondered how that process went, going along with, I mean, the process of putting that together. You know, it was a long form piece that he spent a lot of time with. And what is it like working with him on something like that, where you have to be completely sourced up and have it airtight to even publish something like that?
You know, it's funny. I've never worked with a reporter quite like Kevin before. And I mean it as a total compliment. You know, Kevin, when we were working on the Machado story, Kevin said, the story's not going to be ready to go until I can talk to Machado about everything that is laid out against him in this story. And we waited, right? I mean, I'm sure Kevin told you, you know, it was supposed to run one day. And then we thought, you know, he said, well, when can you get Machado alone? And I think he ended up getting Machado alone before a game at Dodger Stadium. It was either before or after. And he sat down and he said, Manny, I'm working on a story and this is what it says. You know, some of your teammates have said this. Some people in the organization have said this. You know, I'm hearing this. Let's talk about all of these different things. And Manny, you know, to hear Kevin say it, you know, Manny, who can be maybe less than revealing is a nice way to put it sometimes. Manny's responses were good. I mean, good can mean a bunch of things. Manny's responses, I think, were honest. And I think that it created this conversation about where is the leadership in the Padres clubhouse. And, you know, Manny Machado is a leader by example. And, you know, I've been around locker rooms and clubhouses, you know, my whole professional life. And there are guys like that on every team. And it's great until either the production slips or chemistry becomes an issue, whether it's your fault or not, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, Manny considers himself a leader by example. Okay, well, Xander Bogaerts seems to be a leader by, you know, a more public leader. You know, is Manny going to cede some of that limelight to Xander Bogaerts, let's say? So Xander Bogaerts can be sort of the captain, quote unquote. He seemed a little reluctant to do that, right? So it was, you know, Kevin is so thorough and is so unafraid to ask everybody at all levels honest questions. And, you know, I think the fact that Manny talked to him about a lot of these concerns reflected the respect that Manny has for Kevin, who's the one guy in San Diego media who travels with them everywhere and writes about them every day. And I think that it started this discussion, even internally with the Padres, about, well, if Manny Machado is going to be a leader by example only, what can the Padres do to have more leadership or different leadership or acknowledge the kind of leader that Manny is and work with him that way? I would not be surprised, guys, if we see Manny Machado take on more of sort of the traditional leadership roles going forward. Either that or cede the leadership roles to somebody like Xander Bogaerts, who is really highly thought of in the Padres clubhouse and elsewhere. One more thing, and I'll speak to leadership, and then I'll stop rambling.
Oh, go for it.
You know, so much of this too is it's really easy to be a leader when you're having a triple crown season. It's really easy to get your teammates to listen to you when you're the best player on the team. Guys, let's talk about Manny Machado and about Xander Bogaerts last year. These are two guys who struggled, both of them. I mean, not, you know, Manny, not as much as Bogaerts did. But, you know, it must have been really hard for either one of those guys to stand up and really try to take leadership when they themselves are still trying to figure out what they're doing day to day. And, you know, I would not be surprised if this year, especially if somebody like a Bogaerts, you know, picks up where he left off at the end of last year and is really one of their better players, if he then becomes the guy who takes on a lot more of those leadership roles.
Right. Well, also, like, I mean, the leadership, I thought that was interesting. That article kind of mapped that out. But I think that what's interesting to me is that, like, a guy like Manny, who's that talented and he's in that position to be a leader, and Bogaerts too, these are guys who are in that position. They have guaranteed money. Their careers are pretty much locked up as far as how they're going to be compensated playing the actual game. Mm-hmm. And they're supposed to be in this position where because of the money, they are expected to have some kind of level of leadership for the other guys. How relatable are they to those other guys who aren't locked up like that? I mean, that's what I was thinking of last year. You have Tatis, Manny, Bogaerts, and Soto, all who are, you know, Soto eventually gets his money, but, you know, it's like they are not really in the same boat as the rest of the locker room. And how do you lead from that perspective? I think that's what I think is really fascinating with how baseball teams operate, because you have a lot of these guys that are so weighted in how much they mean to the organization. Then you have these other guys who are struggling to get up to those contracts. And maybe that's a lot more complicated to navigate than I think we give credit for, you know?
Well, mm-hmm. Well, sports are unique in that way, right? I mean, let's think about it, right? You go to work tomorrow and the guy doing your job, but a slightly different version of it, might be making 20% more than you, 30% more than you. And if he's making 30% more than you, you probably know a little bit about it and you probably resent him for it, right? Imagine if he's making 60 times what you're making.
Yeah.
60 times. And again, I'm a journalism major from the University of Arizona. Math is not my favorite topic. But what's the league minimum? $675,000, $700,000, something like that?
Yeah.
What's Manny Machado, or what did Juan Soto make last year? Right? So maybe it's 40 times. 30.
Yeah.
And again, you're not doing different jobs. Right? It's you're working in that corner, and the other guy's working in the other corner. He may be better at his job than you are at yours, but they're the same jobs. That to me is what makes sports. And when we talk about culture and chemistry and all those sometimes tired, overplayed words, this is where they really come into play. Because how do you keep the guy who's making the league minimum happy when he might be performing and the guy who's making $30 million a year isn't?
And the guy who's making $30 million a year is expected to uphold this chain of command with the guy who's making closer to what the minimum guy is making. That's where it gets really messy to me. And it did get messy, it seemed like, with, you know, the departure of Bob Melvin, which is like, how does that guy in that position, how's Shilp going to do that? You know, how are they going to navigate? How are they going to uphold this chain of command where it's like, the star players are supposed to be in line with the coach, who's in line with the GM, who's in line with the owner. But if they're making that much money and they're that, and everybody knows they're that valuable, I think that it's very easy for there to be a breakdown in how the leadership that he's putting forward could get muddled or confused or taken the wrong way, or, you know,
sure. Yeah. Well, how about this? Right. I'm a middle manager, right? This is my, I mean, for lack of a better word, we can, you know, make my job sound interesting, and it is, but I'm a middle manager.
Same here.
Right. I'm a middle manager, which means, you know what? You bring donuts in, right? when it's staff meeting time, you're the guy who brings in the bagels or the donuts, or you're the guy who pops for, you know, the ice cream party or whatever it is. And and the implication is you're making a little bit more than everybody else. And so that's what you do, right? Again, imagine if your boss was making, or not, if somebody you work with was making 40 times what you were making. And maybe that guy has a bad week or a bad month. how do you keep resentment from bubbling up, right? Xander Bogaerts, by all accounts, a wonderful guy and a good clubhouse guy and somebody who I thought played great at stretches last year. You know, my guess is it would have been really hard for Xander Bogaerts to stand up in the middle of that clubhouse in July of last year and say, guys, stuff's got to change around here. You know, because totally. There are going to be guys in that room that say, well, yeah, we're struggling because you can't hit, or we're struggling because you have a wrist injury, right? Yeah. I mean, that's
stop hitting in the double plays. Stop hitting.
Right. Go on the DL and get your wrist right. Right. Do something.
Yeah. Play first.
Right. And that's the thing. And that's where managers and a good manager, I think, steps in. And, you know, Bob Melvin's philosophy was to let the clubhouse essentially police itself. And that is a very old school way of doing things, right? Hey, the coach is coach, the players play, and the clubhouse is the player's space. I wonder if Mike Shildt is going to do more towards sort of setting a culture or trying to nip things in the bud when things start to go sideways. Now, my understanding, and again, this is secondhand knowledge, but my understanding is Melvin was very much hands-off in the clubhouse, unless something was really awful. I wonder if Mike Shildt is going to be more involved in the clubhouse, understanding that keeping that dynamic intact this year is going to be a really big challenge.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, Travis, you're a season ticket holder. And, you know, I think like I, as a fan, I'm ready for, I don't know if this has to all come down on Shildt to do this, but as a fan, I feel like a real, maybe, you know, I feel like a real rejection of the Padres selling me like the fun, good vibes thing, like they have been for so long. Like I get that they're fun guys and that they're they have colorful personalities and they can, you know, they have a lot of, you know, love for the game that comes out in the way they play and everything. And I'm all fine with that. But, you know, I think the fun time is over for me. I think I'm more serious this year and I don't need it to be a big party. I just need wins. I don't know. do you feel like a rejection of like, this is just a big fun party and we're doing bits all the time? Do you feel like that is, is that going to fly? Are they going to be able to sell that again? That's what I don't think they're going to be able to do. And it's going to be very interesting to see how they go into spring training and market this team, because I think it's going to land differently with the audience, with the fan base. Travis, I mean, are you receptive to that? Do you think that's?
Yeah, I think it definitely has to hit different with us this year. It's almost like we let them have their fun and it didn't work. And now we have to get serious about it. There's real money on the line. And I don't think fans want to keep spending the kind of money the Padres are asking us to spend now, which looking over the past couple of years has almost done like a straight up kind of approach. It's not something that we can just trust the process on anymore. It doesn't seem like that. And now with Peter not around anymore, it almost instantly when he passed away felt like it became very corporate-ish, you know, and that's just because there's not a face anymore that we can look at and that smile and everything go, oh, look who's in charge. And so, yeah, I think the good vibes are gone. The goodwill of, hey, the Padres are spending money. We're going to spend money too. We're all going to show up and it's all going to be fun is gone. Like it's just, we had last year and it was fun-ish, but the way it ended in the season and what people spent financially, I just think there's got to be a new way to go forward. And I don't know how you market it. I feel really bad for the Padres marketing department this year. You've even seen it on like some of the Twitter posts and stuff. Like if it's not the greatest news in the world, there's a lot of negativity under seeding there.
Well, what was the hashtag last year? Was it bring the gold?
Bring the gold.
Bring the gold. I mean, bring the gold to me says, show me a trophy. And
yes.
And like, they didn't make the tournament, you know?
It's really bad.
Now I would make the argument that a lot of the fun walked out the door when Franmil Reyes was traded all those years ago. Something about him singing "I will always love you" in the dugout was one of my favorite things. You know what I think this is too? When they were viewed as being a year or two ahead of schedule, I think that we people who were watching, and before I had this job, I watched 160 Padre games a year. I mean, I was one of those guys. Now I do too, but it's for work. when they were viewed as being a year ahead, It was so much fun. It was found money, right? Oh my gosh, they weren't even supposed to be doing this, and now they're doing this, right? This is their window. And you can make the argument that by trading, that in trading Juan Soto, in reducing payroll, and watching as the Dodgers go spend
crazy
everybody, that window is closing. It's a lot less fun when you can see that window close, or when you think you can see that window closing. You know, Fernando Tatis isn't 19 years old anymore, right? You know, he's a veteran baseball player. Manny Machado has been here through the, you know, the first 5 years of that deal. He's out there every night. I mean, it's time to get serious, I think. And maybe that's more of a fan thought than it is an organizational thought. But, you know, the Padres are paying a bunch of guys like superstars. And I think that there is some fan belief now that the superstars need to start playing like it. And if they do, by the way, I think that this solves many of their problems. If Bogarts, Machado, Tatis all have great years next year, then I'm not sure it really matters who's playing left field. But man, they haven't all hit on at the same time yet. They weren't all hitting ever last year, the big four at the same time. I mean, yeah. I mean that Kevin broke this down a bunch of different ways. I think there was a stretch when three of the four were all hitting, but it was never four at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, I think, the other monumental shift of the first year that you were the sports editor for the UT. I mean, was the passing of Peter Seidler and what that means. I mean, that's a definite blow to Padres fans, obviously, because he had so much enthusiasm and seemed to be having a lot of fun in the same way that we all were, just having a great team and exciting team. And now, you know, it's the team is being controlled by a trust. Mm-hmm. How does that work with you guys? I mean, like, what's it like covering the team now that they're in the, you know, they're obviously, this is pretty fresh, a fresh transition, but you know, we've heard the name Eric Kasunda, and we haven't really talked to him yet. You know, he hasn't really said anything. We just have an image of a blonde man on Twitter a lot, I guess. But,
one mugshot or yeah, one mugshot at work taken 6 years ago or whatever.
I've had some fun with that. But it's also like, so who's in charge, and does it feel like there's a vacancy when covering the team?
That's more a question for Kevin than it is for me. From my seat, no, not a whole lot has changed, but not a whole lot has happened, right? I mean, they haven't done a whole lot. You know, the week after Peter Seidler died, they hired Mike Schilt as manager. I think that's the last press conference they've had. They haven't made a ton of moves outside of trading Juan Soto. So I think it's still too soon to tell what this means. You know, Eric Kasunda is somebody, you know, it's funny. I know people who worked with him in his chosen field years and years and years ago and still rave about the guy. And by all accounts, he comes very highly recommended. And any, you know, it's one of those, any friend Peter Seidler's probably a pretty good dude. If Peter Seidler thought enough of him to put him in charge of the team, at least short term, rather than somebody Peter Seidler's related to, it must mean because he thought pretty highly of Eric Kasunda. And so, you know, I know that Kevin has said that Kasunda comes off as a very, very good guy. Pardon me, very good guy who I think, you know, is in a really rough spot here. To me, the question isn't necessarily who's in charge. The question is, how long is Eric Kasunda in charge? I mean, they initially said that it was going to be short term, but offered no real plans beyond that outside of, you know, they said that the ownership's going to stay in the family. We'll see. You know, look, the Peter Seidler thing, and I know that lots was written and said about this in real time when he died. You know, I feel bad for Padre fans. I feel worse for Sandy Yakins. This is somebody who did a whole hell of a lot. You know, homelessness is a major problem here. And he did a massive good thing trying to help solve that problem. And he brought people together. And the thing that I love about sports is that it's the thing that we can all agree on, even if we don't agree on much. And it seemed like he used the Padres as a way to get all these different groups together to talk about these big issues like homelessness. And to me, that's the sad part. He seemed like a really good dude as an owner, but I think he was just kind of a really good guy who tried to make San Diego better. And, And hopefully whoever the control person is for the Padres going forward, whether that's Kitsenda or a member of the Seidler family, I hope that they remember that. Because, you know, that's a legacy that they have to live up to, which is, you know, you're following a really, really, really highly regarded person as owner. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, as just Padres fans interested in, you know, what's going on the field, the biggest thing is, you know, it seemed like whenever problems presented themselves about personnel and, you know, the Padres had to improve the team, you know, Peter was there. It always felt like it was coming from a fan's perspective, like who had the access to do something about it. He would just spend the money and do it. To the point where there was a few times where I was like, all right, Peter, calm down. We don't need to.
Yeah. I mean, you read and you hear things like he stepped in to get deals done.
Right.
And, you know, like a fan would, right. You know, like somebody in a fantasy, like in an auction style fantasy draft, you know, you got a buddy in the back who goes, fine, I'll pay $40 for the year or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, I think the biggest concern for Padres fans worried about the product on the field is that that's gone, and that this new, you know, the trust that's controlling it would have a hard line for a budget. They've basically told us that, and they are probably going to end up spending less money than they did last year, which they could end up having a better team. I don't know. It's like, okay, yeah, you're right. It's like a couple games that could go the other way,
And you know what they could, I mean, first of all, the trust, it's not like the team's being run by, corporate. Right. A corporation.
Right.
Corporation. It's being run by the family. And Kitsenda is just kind of following their directions. The plan was always to reduce payroll. You know, Kevin wrote about this last January. The plan last January was to reduce payroll at the end of the season. They knew that they had a bunch of guys coming off the books. At the time, they thought Manny Machado might be coming off the books. Right. Hmm. He had that option. And so that was always the plan. Some fans think that this is directly related to Peter Seidler dying, and it's not. Peter Seidler's plan.
I've seen that before. It's obvious they were going to do this.
Yeah.
You know.
And it coincided with, right, and not to get too in the weeds, but this was going to coincide with sort of the hot lava forming into rock, right? This was going to coincide with Jackson Merrill, with some pitchers, with, you know, some of the younger guys who can play for the league minimum coming up and really contributing. You know, that's what they were hoping for. And so, you know, whether that's what they do, I don't know. I mean, I still think that they're going to make a lot of moves this offseason. I don't know if they're going to be impact moves or not, but they've got holes to fill. And I'm sure we can get into that at some point today too.
Yeah. I mean, that's the big question. I mean, one other thing I wanted to ask you about, if you heard anything, as far as, you know, I thought maybe there was a correlation to how much they're spending and not really having the same TV money coming in. I mean, I think one of the biggest stories of last year was the Bally Sports deal falling through, and here we are in January, and it's like this a lot of Januaries for Padres fans. I don't know how I'm going to watch the Padres on television.
Right.
And, I'd like to know, you know, I think a lot of people would like to figure that out. Have you heard anything on that? Like,
yeah, it's going to be just like last year or just like the end of last year.
Okay. Like when they transferred it.
Right. This whole thing about Amazon Prime or, you know, Prime
Video. Yeah. What was that? I was going to say, there's a Prime Video announcement today.
Right. Does not affect the Padres in the slightest. So however you watched them last August is how you're going to watch them now. And so, you know, for me, that's a subscription through MLB.com that I can then stream on my phone and on my smart TV at home.
Yeah.
It's so funny. I find it much simpler. As somebody who used to live out of the market, when I was living in Tucson, Arizona, the Padres were considered a home team.
Yeah.
And so in order to watch the Padres, I had to do all sorts of workarounds over the years. To be able to just give MLB.com my money and get the Padres in exchange, for me, is actually really easy. But I understand that if you're a cable watcher who's used to just turning on channel 26 or whatever it is and watching the Padres, that it's a little bit of a different deal. So but you're right. The last year too, remember, MLB covered up to 80% of the Padres expenses from the production and broadcasting of their games. That money is now gone. Padres are on their own. And so, you know, they're going to need to boost viewership, and they're going to need to cut costs on the TV side. And we've seen some of that. You know, Mark Sweeney's not coming back. Mm-hmm. Any Heilbrun, who does some work for us too, you know, hasn't done TV since all this happened. So,
yeah.
So, you know, that's where they're at.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting one to follow. And it's not just the Padres. There's a lot of markets in MLB that just didn't have extremely profitable TV deals, yeah. You know, and just eventually the math works out that way.
Well, it's the cord cutting, right? I mean, yeah, 10 years ago, everybody would get Cox so they could watch TV.
I did.
Now, you know, you can, you know, I think that their strategy is really smart, and I think it's the future. But, you know, they're going to be ahead of the curve, which means they're probably going to have to take some lumps, but before they figure out the right way to make it not only a great broadcast, but profitable too. So,
well, I mean, so let's look at the roster. I mean, we do have some time, and you know, the MLB off season, the hot stove, you know, when we were kids, it seemed like it was over before New Year's, but now it can go up until halfway through spring training, you know, and what do you think the Padres can do? I mean, they've accumulated a fair amount of prospects that they could trade. They have some wiggle room, you know. They don't really have a pitching staff or an outfield at this point, but
outside of that, yeah. outside of the no outfield, no pitching.
I mean, the pitching is just, I mean, the pitching, they got a lot from the Yankees, so I think that, you know, they're piecing it together, but is there anybody left on the market that you would like to see them go after, just as like a middling, you know, two or three or four? I don't know.
Let me start with just the outfield types because,
yeah,
or whatever. You know, Tommy Pham's out there, and I know that he's a polarizing fella.
I mean, yeah, I'm for the content. I'm, you know, at this point, he's not fun. You know, he doesn't smile.
Great interview. But here's the thing, right? Tommy Pham, there is no bigger fan of Mike Shildt than Tommy Pham.
Okay.
Tommy Pham, I think, enjoyed his time in San Diego. He is somebody who I thought was one of the Diamondbacks' best players down the stretch last year. A sneaky, great deadline move that the Diamondbacks made and gave up almost nothing for him. I think he's a guy you can pencil in left field every day. I think he's a league average left fielder who you could have for a relative bargain. There aren't many of those out there. Speaking with my baseball dork fan heart here, I would love to see Joey Votto play for the Padres.
He had a great year
last year. He's interesting. He's a different kind of player. Somebody who I think is in the Hall of Very Good, you know, maybe not the Hall of Fame, but the Hall of Very Good.
Wow. And, really? I mean,
I like him a lot as a player.
Joey Votto? You don't
Joey
think
he's Votto.
I'd say he's Hall of Famer, but
I think he's a, I mean, I think he would be a Hall of Famer just because of who's getting in now, but that's surprising. I think I've always kind of been weary of the church of Joey Votto. Like, people seem to be obsessed with him, but he seems like he would be a Hall of Famer, but yeah, I don't know.
But he's a guy. And again, you know, the question is, there's no simple answer to the Padres problems here because we don't know where everybody's playing. Do the Padres need a first baseman? I don't know. Depends, right? Well, if Corona was playing first base, maybe not.
Need Xander to be open to it?
I mean, right. Do they need Bogarts to be open to playing first?
I don't know.
Do you re-sign Kim or do you allow Kim to play short as part of a long-term play to keep him? Let's say, and there's been no indication that this is happening, I'm couching this as just saying, let's just say, hypothetically, they say to Bogarts, hey, we'd like you to play some first and to DH some. Maybe Kim plays some shortstop. Well, then all of a sudden, you know, the Padres need what? Second baseman? And who's out there? I mean, can you go get an impact second baseman easier than you can get an impact first baseman right now? Could they go get Jonathan India? Could they go get Jazz Chisholm, who could play either center field or second base? You know, I think who they get may end up dictating what they do with guys like Bogarts, Kim, even Tatis, Cronenworth. I mean, all these guys can play a number of different spots. And, know, yeah. I'm not sure it's written in ink yet where all those guys are going to play this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that definitely seems like the biggest challenge for Schilt is to, I mean, it's weird because like last year it didn't feel like that big of a problem. And at least on Tatis's side, I mean, he just played great outfield and that was fine. And then, yeah, I don't know. It does seem like the value of Jake Cronenworth at first base is not the same as, you know, what it would be at second base, you know.
Well, and it's the optics, and it's stupid because this is, I feel very old saying this, and it's not a compliment, is like Jake Cronenworth just kind of looks better when he's a second baseman hitting the way he hit in
yeah.
from 2020 to 2022, right? He's an all-star second baseman if he does that. He's a below average first baseman when he does that, just because at first base you expect more. Yeah. And that's a silly way to look at baseball in the year 2024. When we have the DH, it doesn't matter what position you play. It matters what the sum of the whole does. But, you know, is Jake Cronenworth maybe better suited being like Ben Zobrist? Play a little left, play a little second, play a little third, play a little first. I mean, is that how you best use him? I mean, he certainly, when he has hit in the past, it has been playing more of a, when he was playing more of a super sub role or playing second base, certainly not playing first. So,
yeah, I mean, I never, you know, I hadn't thought of the Joey Votto. I thought we were just done with him as a, I wasn't sure he was going to get another job, but
he wants to.
I mean, hey,
but you know what? And here's the problem too, right? The Padres also did a thing last offseason where they went, well, I'm sure Matt Carpenter and Nelson Cruz, some combination of them will be fine. And they bet on those two guys and it failed.
Yeah.
Dodgers took a similar wager on JD Martinez and were wildly successful, right? Like, I mean, they paid Martinez essentially what the Padres paid, what the Padres paid Cruz and Carpenter combined.
Right. I think something like that.
Something like that. Whatever it was, it wasn't. If it was more, it wasn't much more. And it worked. You know, so the thing is, like, if they're going to add veteran guys, whether that's a Pham or a Votto or somebody like that, you better make darn sure that they're guys who are going to hit, who are going to literally like hit a baseball and also like hit as in be successful. You know. I mean, I don't know. To me, so many of these questions, and then we can talk about pitching.
Yeah, I mean,
I think there's more than one way to be successful with the pitching staff, and it looks to me that Preller, because he's found so few quality starters who he could actually afford, that it sounds like he's building up his bullpen to the point where maybe he just wants guys to go five, or he wants to fill the back end with guys who can go five, or have some bullpen days. And I know that that's probably not going to be what happens, but this is how he's sort of hedging his bets. I think you look at all the relievers who they've signed and all the sort of 3-4 inning guys who they have in their system. You know, maybe that's what they're going to do at the five spot or at the four and the five spot to start the year if they don't find somebody. I would be curious. I'm still fascinated by Adrian Morahone. He's somebody who I know cannot stay healthy, but his stuff is electric and always has been. He throws hard. He's not old. I know.
Yeah.
I mean, mid-20s.
Still 24.
Jeez. I mean, we've been talking about him since he was what, 16?
Hey, one of these international signing guys has to work out.
Right. Yeah, that's a great point. They released Michelle Baez, didn't they?
Yeah.
You know, to me, that's the thing. Like, maybe he hits. I don't know. It's so hard to sit there and think of what AJ Preller might do, because just when you think you've got him figured out, you know, he pulls off a 3-way trade on the second day of the season, like he did with Chris Paddock. Right.
Yeah.
You know, you just don't know what he has up his sleeve.
Well, he's built up the farm system back to where they have a lot of front loaded, like, you know, top end guys that they could, I think, I don't know. If his idea is to basically just piece it together throughout the season and not necessarily have your staff locked down 5 starters, these are my 5 on opening day, that's probably the smartest way to do it, especially if you have all these stockpiled assets that you could move. I mean, I don't know what their plan is with Camposano going forward, with Salas coming, you know, and all that. the guys that they've signed already. There's, and then the stuff, the guys that they got from the Yankees are pretty well regarded as mm-hmm. pretty much ready to go major league back players. End guys.
Yeah.
I think, I think maybe this is some a sign of growth of Preller that he's ready to just, you know, see what comes available throughout the season. And if the team's in a good position, they can actually go for it, you know, and that's always fun. A trade deadline yeah. with an active AJ Preller.
Well, and you know, it's funny, even somebody like I loved that they went and they got Luis Patino back.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And it's so funny. And I don't mean this as an indictment of AJ Preller in the slightest. Like the Padres had a stretch there when they weren't very good, but they had arms who were worth taking flyers on. And I think of Luis Perdomo. Do you remember him?
Oh,
starter. Yeah. He's now like a Brewers reliever, but he was a guy who for like 2 years, like, was electric. I'm not sure if he knew where the ball was going sometimes, but he had this strong arm. And if they were just mediocre instead of terrible, he could have been their four or their five, and they might have been able to stick it out with him and see how it goes. You know, somebody like Patino, you know, if he can be a swing guy or a long guy out of the bullpen, you know, he's young enough, he's got good stuff. Obviously a bad track record. You don't, you know, it's concerning that he would just essentially be cut loose.
Yeah.
You know, at his age, but you know, I'd like taking flyers like that. I mean, that's smart. It's what smart, good teams do. How many times do the Dodgers sign a guy and you go, huh, Evan Phillips. Okay. And then 3 months later, he's an All-Star.
Yeah.
You know,
Justin Turner.
Justin friggin' Turner.
I mean, that's what's so crazy.
Chris Taylor, Max Muncy.
So, you know, I think that you're right. I think that this has been the offseason of AJ Preller sort of working the margins. And by the way, they have a manager now whose stated goal is to work the margins, right? Like, I mean, he talks about doing the little things, right? To squeezing out two wins over the course of a 162 game season, you know, things that make a big difference in the long term. And if the Padres, again, had two or three more wins last year, had they run the bases a little better or.
Yeah.
You know, I think of the game against the Diamondbacks where Soto hit a warning track fly ball that would have been a walk-off grand slam, right? It was, I think, game one of a doubleheader.
Yeah, yeah.
if he gets a gust of wind or if they get 8 more feet, does everything change? It might.
Yeah.
I mean, it would make sense for what they did statistically. It seems like they just had this – I mean, I don't know. The last season – the 2023 season should be studied by a lot of people. Throughout the rest of our lives,
they measure clutch now, and I think they set a record for like worst clutch since it's been tracked. Meaning, like all their stats clutch were great, but when it mattered, they couldn't produce. And I remember watching half the games, and it just seemed like you guys are in this. They would then not fight tooth and nail and just kind of let it go. And you're right, when there's only a couple of games that are the difference in the season, those kind of wins have got to happen. You've got to figure out a way to make it work.
Well, shoot, to be, and I almost swore on your podcast and I just stopped myself.
Go for it.
If they could just win 2 or 3 of those extra inning games. I mean,
they didn't win any, did they?
No, or they won one towards the end.
Yeah,
you know, Kevin and I used to play this game, and, you know, I'd call Kevin and he'd be, you know, somewhere, you know, Milwaukee, and it's a Thursday, and, you know, I'm talking to him before the game. And we used to play this game called What If I Told You? And last year's, if we wrote a book about last year's Padres, that would be the title. What If I Told You? What if I told you that Seth Lugo would be great and Michael Wacha would be great?
Right.
Okay. And Gary Sanchez, who you got for a bag of balls, would be great. And Ha-Sung Kim, for a stretch, would be number 2 in baseball in war. And Luis Campusano would figure it out. And Josh Hader would be the best closer in the National League. And Fernando Tatis Jr. would be a Gold Glove right fielder. Right? And Juan Soto would be the best player in the National League for whole stretches at a time. How many games would you tell me the Padres would win? Oh, 103? 106?
Yeah, I mean, zooming out. Yeah, it should be.
Yeah, no, it's like in the 80s. And like they kind of got lucky at the end that it was 80.
Yeah, it was like
83. I mean, that's
death by a thousand cuts.
And if I were an optimist, and the journalism has beaten the optimism out of me sometimes. If I were an optimist, I would say, look at all the things that AJ Preller got right last year. You know, we talked about Carpenter and Cruz being disasters, and they were.
Yeah.
But a lot of what he touched outside of that actually delivered. And, you know, that's not a bad track record in January and February as he's trying to talk somebody to come fill out the back end of their rotation. Right, go, hey, look, we gave Seth Lugo a chance last year and he did this. We gave Michael Wacha a chance and he did this. You know, so many things actually went right last year. It almost makes it more frustrating. It'd be one thing if they were just crappy. You know, it's individually, they had some really good performances. It just seems like they weren't all swimming in the same direction every night. And you could tell, you know, you could tell as a fan, you could watch, they weren't all clicking at the same time.
I mean, we've done crappy. We've had Perdomo as our number two starter, I think, in one of those seasons.
Let's talk about Jared. Let's talk about the Jared Weaver year. How about that?
Like, I remember what was the year where Lauer pitched
the opening day starter,
and everybody's saying like, you know, he earned it. He did earn it, and I'm wow.
How many times do we have to read about the CHIRV? About Joey Lucchese's CHIRV. You know, but hey, you got to write about something. And those guys were interesting.
That's the first wave. Is that the second wave of talent? I can't remember.
It was one of those. Something was crashing on.
Early wave.
But, you know, I mean, and you guys, we're all about the same age. I mean, you know, I grew up watching friggin' Tim Hyers play first base and Roberto Pettigini come over in a trade. And, you know, the second Tom Lampkin stint and all these guys, Arkie Semprocko, and all these guys who, like, I grew up, I watched, I was a kid, I liked them. You know, I still think it's worth looking back as people who grew up in San Diego, looking back and going, you know, this team's damn interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting still makes them better than 40 of the previous 50 iterations of the San Diego Padres. And
that is true.
You know, I mean, to be able to go to the ballpark every night and see, you know, a guy, I used to say last year, you know, every night, and you could see maybe four guys who might one day go to the Hall of Fame. You know, this year it might be three. I don't know. Is Yu Darvish a Hall of Famer eventually? I don't know. But like Manny Machado could be. Fernando Tatis could be. You know, Yu Darvish could be. I don't know about Xander Bogaerts. But like there's still a lot to like about this team. I just don't know. I just don't know what's going to happen. And that's what makes sports so fun.
Yeah, we definitely didn't know last year. I don't think I'd ever been so confident. And if I were to listen back on how I was talking about the team before the season started last year, I think I'd cringe, go hide under a pillow.
And Peter Seidler, God bless Peter Seidler. You know, Peter Seidler goes, I'm wondering if the victory parade's going to be on land or at sea. You know, I mean, he spoke for all of us a year ago.
Yeah.
He spoke for all of us a year ago where everybody thought, well, it's only they're going to continue taking those steps. And, you know, conveniently forgetting that the Padres went cold for long stretches, even in 2022, completely forgetting that they had major holes, that there were issues with, you know, Bob Melvin and AJ Preller and some issues with Manny Machado, even during that year, you know, you whitewash over the bad stuff when you win. And the bad stuff gets, I think, you know, it gets highlighted when you lose. And again, that's what makes baseball so interesting. I mean, 6 months in the same room with 25 guys. So,
true. Well, you mentioned, you know, we're the same age. Travis, you're a couple years older, I think, but we're all in our mid 40s getting through it. you know, something happened right before Christmas that the UT reported on, and you know, we're at the same age, so we're like, we know the older guard of the San Diego sports media, and we're familiar with the younger up and coming generation, and you're part of that too, I think, but you know, there was a story that came out for the UT that Coach John Quintero was getting a let go from 97.3. Mm-hmm. What was it like reporting on that story? I mean, it seemed like the UT got some pushback on whether or not the reporting was done correctly. I mean, what's your take on that with the John Maffey article that he wrote, basically telling everybody that Coach John Quintero was going to be leaving the station, and it seemed like that just turned into this huge media storm with hacksaws jumping in off the top rope and Ben and Woods are defending themselves and the station manager's defending themselves.
Like, you know, these stories crop up in journalism. I was using this analogy to somebody recently. Uh-huh. It's not taking a charge, right? Like, I get to use a basketball analogy. You know, I can set my feet and take a charge. It's when you come around a screen and you just get laid out. That's when, you know, and this was one of those stories. I would have never thought. It was the week of Christmas. I would have never thought that this was something that was going to take on a life of its own. And it did. And a lot of it was social media based, I think. I think, you know, I think that the pro John Quintero people probably were surprising in number to 97.3. You know, he became sort of this cause, you know, right at Christmas. The frustrating part on the frustrating part on my end is this, is we did everything in, you know, I heard somebody on 97.3 talk about journalism 101. Well, you know, journalism 101 is you call all the affected parties and you ask for their side of the story and you tell everybody's side. And, you know, we tried for days to get a hold of people at 97.3 and they wouldn't return our calls. And then after the new year, they say, well, we couldn't return your calls because John was an employee. Here's really what went on. And we offered him weekends and he said no. Right. You know, we told him before, but, you know, before his last show, or, you know, we told him in October that he wasn't going to be invited back at the new year. But, you know, that also wasn't for publication and wasn't, you know, he was not supposed to be telling people, essentially. So it's frustrating. You know, you go through things the right way. You make the phone calls. You know, I mean, I think it was 5 phone calls and text messages to the decision makers at 97.3. And you get nothing back, and not even on background. And, you know, that's, to me, that's frustrating. You know, the one thing that, and it's is a regret that I have with that story is, you know, John went on Quintero's show. Periodically throughout the year, there should have been a note, and that was my fault on there, that says editor's note: John Quintero is a frequent or regular guest. John Maffey is a frequent or regular guest on the John Quintero show. I think that that would have been putting our cards on the table. You know, John has known John for a very long time, and
they both John. Just so people know, John Maffey, he kind of covers the high schools.
Oh yeah, stuff, and has, right, and, yeah, right, yeah. Right, and I mean he's a holdover,
and that's John Quintero's. One of his focuses is the local high school.
Local high schools. And yep. You know, John Quintero votes in the Union Tribune football and basketball polls and has since we've had one. You know, John Quintero pays attention to all the high school sports. So that's what was a little frustrating to me, was just, you know, we were trying to get the full story and only one side talked. And, you know, when only one side talks, it's hard to tell a complete story. And, you know, I think that some of the blowback they probably got came, and I can't speak for them, but, you know, when he wasn't allowed to host his final show, I think that when social media picked up on that, it probably exacerbated the situation for 97.3. But I don't know. I mean, it's so funny, you know, like, I've known Annie since I got here in this new role. And I think the world of Annie, I think she's a very good person and a very hard worker and somebody who's going to do a very good job. Craig Elston has been a pro in this town for decades. You know, he has another Padres podcast, and I'm sure we've all listened to at some point over the years, and it's good. And, you know, that none of any of this is a reflection of what we think of what anybody thinks of them. Right. You know, I think that they're going to do fine. It's just one of those stories. I think I'm not sure. I don't know. I think they were probably a little surprised at the number of people who came out in support of John Quintero when that story came out.
Right. And, you know, I thought it was a really interesting exchange. And, you know, I feel for everybody involved who's having, you know, I think what happens a lot of times with these media stories is that, and you guys, you know, the UT went through this with all the layoffs, you know, when these job issues become actual news to other people that have nothing to do with it, that gets really complicated really fast. And, you know, I felt for, we have friends with Ben and Woods and, you know, that whole group of guys, they've been super supportive of us and everything. Mm-hmm. But, you know, do you feel like what I thought was really interesting about that whole exchange was that, you know, with Hacksaw getting involved, who's basically my sports dad at this point, you know, like he jumps in and it becomes this old guard versus new guard in a way. And
what about Scott Kaplan? What about Scott Kaplan? Scott Kaplan comes out.
He says, I don't even know anything.
He prefaces it with, I don't know anything. But here's what I'm guessing may have happened. And it got, it had so much legs to it. I think the New York Post picked it up.
Yeah.
It got so much legs to it that the Padres had to issue a statement saying that there was no like validity to Scott Kaplan's theory, which starts with Scott Kaplan saying, I don't know what's going on over there. I mean, this is where things get out of control. And some of it's social media. Hey, man, you know, like we're all on Twitter. Like these things take on a life of their own. And I think that this was one of those stories that that took on a life of its own. And, you know, I'm sure John Quintero will surface on some platform. I know that he's doing USD or UCSD basketball for ESPN Plus a while ago. You know, I'm sure everybody wishes him well. His former bosses, I mean, again, when we finally did talk to 97.3, it was that Tuesday after New Year's. You know, when we talked to the program director's like, you know, we never wanted John to leave. We want John to stay in a different role. And, you know, everybody over there wishes John the best. It's just one of those things that just got out of hand. And yeah, the Hacksaw jumping in and Hacksaw jumping in and the Scott Kaplan, I don't know what's going on over there, but let me throw a theory.
Yeah.
that I think that certain people in the Twitter sphere grouped us, the Union Tribune, with these other reactionary types. And that wasn't the case at all. As we had written a news story and tried to get 97.3 to comment on it. And then you've got these other people popping in going like, well, here's what I bet's happening.
Right. So. Yeah. I mean, what it came across to me was that it's just the reaction to John Quintero not being on the, in the same role there was that, you know, it does feel like 97.3 with Ben and Woods and now with Annie and Elston, there's like a divide in San Diego sports media for people that figured out a way to do it, to do, make content and have a real conversation with San Diegans without being dependent on the Chargers. And it feels like Ben and Woods and like a lot of people at 97.3 kind of figured that out. And it felt like a lot of jealousy and a lot of vitriol that goes towards them. Seems like there's like a jealousy that those guys kind of figured it out. Not that the UT did that, but I mean, I'm saying that, like, you know, Hacksaw and Scott coming in and the Chargers leave and then they don't know what to do. And there's a lot of people in San Diego media where it feels like they can't compete in that arena the way it is now. And there's a lot of bitterness that comes out. It seems like, I don't know.
You know what? And I will say this too. In my previous stop, I was the backup ESPN local, you know, drive time host, right?
Maybe
8 times a year, I'd have to fill a show. Do you know how hard it is to fill 3 hours on the air?
I mean,
and what Ben and Woods do a great job of, is Ben and Woods make the co-hosts and the people in their orbit the show. A lot of it. They talk about Padres a lot, but it's not necessarily callers. It's this sort of culture that they've created where it is, you know, it's about the people there. And and then they can all talk about the Padres or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I will say this with regards to the Chargers, and it's been a year, guys.
I know.
we've changed some things. I still get two major complaints. Complaint number one, you write too much about the Chargers. Complaint number two, you don't write enough about the Chargers. And I get emails every Monday. You know, why do you insist on running Nick's report card about the Chargers? And then 5 minutes later, I'll get something saying, why'd you only run 200 words about the Chargers game? It's I'm not sure San Diego knows what to do with the Chargers. I mean, it's funny. I still think that the Chargers are probably the most liked team among all NFL teams in San Diego, but they're also easily the most hated team.
Right.
And so if you're in media, right, a skeptic would sit there and say, well, then that's media gold, right? If they create a visceral reaction in somebody one way or another, then we should do all the Chargers we can possibly handle. That's not what I do. That's not what the UT does. We try to be responsible about it.
Sure.
But it's
that's
interesting. It's interesting. The whole talk radio world is.
I think that the NFL, the rhythm of the NFL is just way more conducive to talk sports talk radio, and to have that be removed and not really know what to do with the rhythm of a baseball team that is bad at the time. It just felt like 97.3 did a lot of innovative stuff to actually build that audience. And then when they get good, they're ready for it in a way that other people weren't. And that's what it kind of felt like to me when people were coming out of the woodworks.
Sure.
Somehow well, blaming them. Yeah.
Right. And if you look at Annie, and Craig.
Yeah.
You know, I think that Craig's a soccer insider too. So right. Yeah. There's a part of me that wonders, okay, are they setting them up to be sort of the, if not the radio home, then maybe the future radio home of the MLS franchise. I don't know. And then secondly, Annie and Craig can both talk Padres like you wouldn't believe.
And
you know, if you're the home of the Padres and San Diego has one, you know, major sports professional franchise, then you should talk about the Padres all the time. Come on, man. You know, you shouldn't talk about the Chargers. You should talk about the Padres. You're the home of the Padres. Sorry.
Right. Well, hey, Ryan, thanks for coming on. It's been a great catch up with you. I think we should try like maybe a summer pod, maybe sure. A trade deadline catch up, maybe something like that.
Sure.
We should, Travis, what we can do is we can cut our predictions and our what we brought up on what they should do and see if it actually comes to fruition. And we'll just we'll go through that.
Kevin and I talked about doing that.
Yeah.
There's a grid. We did a grid with our baseball preview and it was like, hey, so pick the winner of all divisions and the National League MVP and the AL MVP. I think I had the Padres winning the World Series, or I'm sorry, losing the World Series to the Yankees. And I had Juan Soto as the National League MVP. so I just, not good.
Yeah. The favorite part of my day, the only thing I use Facebook for now is I go into Facebook, I check my memories and I see what I thought was funny in like 2012 writing Facebook status. That's my favorite thing to check on. Oh, wow. I said that. Okay. That was all right. Well, yeah. You can check out, has the Hot Lava Pod that's coming back in the spring.
Oh,
right?
It's coming back sooner than that.
Okay.
I was going to say, when we talked about having to fill air, Kevin and I have a half hour long podcast
between series.
It's every series. It is so hard to fill a half hour with smart, interesting content that we just don't do it during the off season. And so we will absolutely, the new Hot Lava podcast coming your way here when Kevin reports the spring training in a couple of weeks.
Cool. You can follow all of Ryan's work at the San Diego Union Tribune. Buy a newspaper, people. Come on. Let's just, you know, help it out. Help us out.
buy a digital subscription.
Do that.
They're cheap and they're worth it. They're cheap and it's a great way to start your day.
Okay. Man. You can check out our stuff at the kepfaith.com, kepfaith at Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Travis, do you have anything else? Are we all set?
I'm just ready for baseball. Seems like it's too far away.
Yeah. Well, maybe there's not going to be a fan fest this year. I guess that's because the gallery
pretty wild.
All right.
We can have it somewhere else. We can have it at Snapdragon. I mean, come on.
Yeah, let's do it. We'll check in with you probably in early February or something like that. But go Padres and keep the faith. All right. Bye.
Bye.
Let's go Padres.